for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Matt Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Matt Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Matt Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Matt. I've got the power!
Good afternoon, Phoenix! Ow! Hey, let me feel it. Everybody wants to know. What's up, gang? Oh, it's a beautiful day outside in beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Mac Newton. And at some point here in the next hour, we're going to do a power hour show. I don't know when it's going to start. What's up, Zach?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Oh, could not be better. Musical guest host today, the one and only Riley B. King, better known as the Blues Boy, better known as BB. Oh, we're going to tell you a lot about BB King today. 81 years young and still playing like you just can't believe it.
Amazing.
Yep. He and Lucille go out on the road 250 days a year. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to know why I sing the blues. Well, one of the reasons I'm singing the blues is I'm living in the middle of a construction site. That's one of the reasons right now. I'm telling you. I got another reason. It's called 7th Street. I had to drive down here on that today. Oh, my goodness gracious. That's why I'm singing the blues. Oh, my goodness. Welcome to the show, gang. I think we got a great show on tap for you. If I can calm down. Usually I'm not this hyper at the beginning of the show. I had that extra ripe Mac shake this morning. It's still hanging in there. What's the temperature outside there, Zach? Still got it over?
78 degrees and sunshine.
Thank you.
Friend.
And like he said, make sure you put those seatbelts on out there, gang. Hey, fellas, just a word for you guys. It's the Christmas season here now, you know, and if this were TV, I could like, well, if I could see all you guys, TV already, what is going on here?
No, help. And
I say, all right, let me see all the hands of all the ladies who have finished their Christmas shopping. I'd be willing to bet you that a third of the women listening have finished. Not just started, but finished. And I'd be surprised if I could get two guys who've even started. Zach, have you started your Christmas shopping yet?
Not a chance.
Of course not. And there's a reason for that. I mean, it's scientific. Because if we buy our gifts too early, we'll change our minds somewhere along there. We'll have to buy a different one, you know? And we can get more something more specific the later we wait. But fellas, don't wait till the Christmas Eve. You'll end up in Walgreens. I mean, that accounts for all those major sales of all the clappers. Clapper, you know? And stuff like that. you're down to, you know, you're down, to, you're desperate. And another hint, don't buy a book. Women buy their own books, fellas. Don't buy a book. Women don't want books, you know. In fact, the smaller the box you buy it in, it's the more she's going to like it, okay? I'm telling you, just a little word from Mac Daddy. You know, if the box is real small, light blue or something like that, she's going to go crazy with it. Oh, my goodness gracious. What's going on with
Calm
me?
Calm down.
I have no idea. But I'm serious about that. Don't buy books and things like that. And, you know, listen to the things they say in the next 2 weeks. They'll tell you exactly what they want. But when you hear it, act like you didn't. Run right to the kitchen. Write it down. Okay, write it down. Don't try to remember it. You will forget. Nothing is more exasperating than think, I know what she wants. I know, I can't remember. What was that? You know, and don't buy her any more slippers and robes. She's got all that stuff already. You know? More robes. And you know what? If you're going to buy clothes, don't worry about size. You know, whatever size you think she is, buy one or two sizes smaller and just say, baby, you look like a four to me, okay? You look like a four, you know? And she's going to say, oh, well, thank you. And that's a good thing, you know, because she feels like she's a four. And it gives her another reason to go back to the store and buy some more stuff. Because she's got to take that back, get that 12. So, anyway, I have got to stop drinking.
Did you have one on the way down here, too?
I'm just trying to give the brothers a little help out here, you know, man. So, you know, this is making sense to you, isn't it, Zach?
Plenty.
Absolutely.
I'm a sponge.
All right, you got to soak in this stuff up, you know. Listen to them, gentlemen. Listen to what they'll tell you what they want. But don't look like you got it. You know, just put that little poker face on, you know. You know, absolutely. But I'll tell you things that do work for them. You know, women love purses. They love purses, shoes. These are all hints for you. Shawls, they're in this year. You know, the really nice shawls and, you know, ponchos and things. You know, stuff like that. If you buy a dress, buy it small. I don't care what you do, buy it small. In fact, intentionally buy it a size smaller. And anything that sparkles is always a good thing. And that's always good for late Christmas shopping too, okay? But be warned, the later you go, all the smaller things are gone. You're going to have to go bigger. And going bigger will never make her unhappy. So, all right. There you are. Christmas hints from the Mac Daddy.
Just remember jewelry.
You know, and I tell you something right now. If you buy a Christmas gift and you ask her, how do you like that? And she says, fine. You are in deep trouble, my man. You are in deep trouble if she says, fine. Because you know what? When she says fine, it means that she is totally fed up with what she's looking at. Or she's trying to end the discussion. She's saying, you're stupid. You've done something dumb. Get out of my face. You like that? Oh, it's fine. Whew. Okay. And if she looks like she really doesn't like it, you sure you like it? Is something wrong? And she says nothing, you're in deeper trouble. Deeper. Nothing always means something. I'm serious about this. Nothing means something. Zach, are you listening here?
Once again, fully attentive.
Okay. Got to be on your toes. When she says nothing, I mean, usually women use nothing to describe a feeling, you know, that she just wants to turn you inside out and beat you up really bad. You know, I was listening to a comedian that wanted Wanda something, you know.
Wanda Sykes.
Wanda Sykes, you know, and she was saying on TV, she says, you know, it's a good thing that women weren't born with the muscles that men have, because she did. She said, if we had your muscles, we would just kick your butt all day long.
She's too much. Know?
She would just beat up. Anyway, I got a show to do. Why you get me all distracted here? It's all your fault.
Oh, thank you.
Fine.
Nice.
Fine. A soft sigh. Not a statement, not a word, but it's definitely a statement when she's going that. That means she's content. You want the soft sigh. You don't want the loud sigh, though. If she gives you a loud sigh, that's almost a word. But it is. But she's telling you she thinks you're an idiot again. You know? And she's probably going to finish up that loud sigh with, you ask her, what's wrong? Nothing. Leave the house at that point. Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's not quite time for shout-outs yet. We're going to get down to it. Today, we're going to kind of finish out. We were talking about last week awareness, finishing up our topic on mental programming. We're going to transcend into universal laws, which I am going to meld into one topic with our annual New Year's topic of goals. So I'm going to be talking about universal laws and goals brought in together to show you how we can use them to bring about a relaxed, focused approach to making your dreams come true. But first, it was in the fall of 1988. That was a very, very trying time in my life. I got my first hip replaced in 1987. I just went downhill from there. not the hip itself, but financially, spiritually, emotionally, I was struggling to get a grip, wondering, why me? I need my legs. I'm a martial arts instructor. I was battling that. I'd struggled financially for a long time. Anyway, I mean, martial arts is a tough business. I think at the very best, I was never really that profitable, but I was making ends meet. At least I was doing my own thing, and it brought me a degree of satisfaction. But I wasn't looking. I never expected to get rich doing it. But by the fall of 88, I was deeply in debt. I was walking out to check my mail. Colleen, the manager of the apartment complex where I stayed, she came out and gave me an eviction notice. 6 days I had to get out. Normally they give you 30, but I'd ignored those when they came in the mail. I just tore them up. I figured if I didn't see them, they didn't exist. Not true. But on the planet I lived on at the time, things like that happened. So they gave me a 30-day, a 15-day, and finally she handed me a 6-day notice. So I was faced with a major decision. When I lived back in Illinois, I bought brand new a 1973 yellow Corvette off the showroom floor at the Palatine, Illinois Chevy dealer. Cost me $5,800 and it was loaded. $5,800. Brand new in 1973. My pride and joy. It was the only thing that of real value that I owned. And I had really taken care of it. It was just like new. And 1973 was a kind of a unique car. It was the first year with the soft nose, and it still had the steel bumpers. And it was an L82, small block V8 with a Holley carburetor, dual, the four barrels, double pumper. I mean, it was just ripping. You know, something like that today, I'm not sure what it's worth, but I'm sure that people out there that are familiar with the car auctioning circuit can tell you, very valuable piece of automotive equipment today. And I had planned to keep it forever, but it just wasn't to be. Well, like as I said, I was facing severe financial pressures beyond anything that I had could previously imagine. I mean, my business had failed again. I was broke again. I've never been poor, but I've been broke a lot. I know what it is to not have any money at all. But being poor is something I'm totally unfamiliar with. Being poor is like a state of mind, a philosophy, if you like. I've never been poor. No matter how bad things got, I always felt it was temporary. I always believed in myself and in God and my destiny here. Then I always felt destined for something better than what I was doing. I just knew I had to get rolling on it. I didn't know when it was going to happen, but I always felt I could. Well, nonetheless, I was still responsible for all this money that I owe, thousands of dollars, to vendors. So I only had this one choice. I had to sell my car. I know there are a lot of people right now just groaning, going, oh, no. Well, I thought about it, but it wasn't really a long process. I really didn't have any other options. Eviction? Living on the street again? So I sacrificed so I could pay off my debts and attempt to start over again, hopefully smarter this time. So I did sacrifice it, my pride and joy. Hopefully this stands for another chance to save my career, put myself on the road to success. I was always thinking. I was like that football quarterback. He's 3 touchdowns down in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes to go, and he still thinks he can win. That was me. I'm up to my eyes in debt. I don't own anything. I just have can barely walk. My hip is hurting, but still, I'm still holding hope that I can still do it. However, now without a car, I had to ride my bike back and forth to my studio every day, and I had to do this for almost 2 years. This decision, gang. has become the defining moment of my life, convinced me that I was willing to sacrifice for my future. First time. First real time that I sacrificed something meaningful that I was willing to do without, that I was willing to put off immediate gratification for the possibility of future success and happiness. No guarantee, just that possibility. You know, so many people want things, but not many have asked this question of themselves. What am I willing to give up in order to get it? Are we willing to do it out? Are we willing to suffer short-term pain for the prospect of long-term gain? For me, since that defining moment in my life, I have encountered many people with great potential achieving at a level far below their possibilities because they're not willing to make the sacrifices that will put them on that fast track. I'm not saying that's the only sacrifice I have to make, but it was one, I guess, that the universe was waiting for me to make. Show us something, Mac, that you can match your requests. We hear what you're asking for, but what are you willing to do? What are you bringing to the party? I'm sure you've heard the phrase, having your cake and eating it too. It's very possible to do exactly that, but not early in the game. No. Having your cake and eating it too is reserved for those who have sacrificed early on. Very little consistent success is possible without having sacrificed early on, and most likely often. We must be willing to give up in order to get. People trying to hang on to everything, but risk. They're not destined for greatness. One of the biggest obstacles to success is our unwillingness to sacrifice, our attachment to certain things, and even our attachments to negative people and negative situations, and especially negative people. In most cases, the greater the sacrifice, the greater the return. I'll never forget that time of my life. I'll never forget the mindset that sacrifice gave to me. I'll never forget the 2 years I had to spend walking and riding that bike before I had any kind of a vehicle. And even when I had saved enough money finally to buy one, I had created such a success mentality and a thought process, I was almost afraid to buy another car. I was afraid that maybe I would drift back into the same mindset, that I would become lazy again, and I would start, that the other Mac Newton would show up, the one who didn't want to get up early, the one who didn't want to stay late, the one who didn't want to work, the one who didn't want to use his creativity. The one was always looking for the easy way out. The one was always ignoring his responsibility. Would that Mac Newton show up again? I was afraid. I really was. I was afraid. So it's like I had to, even when I bought the first car, a used 1984 white Chevrolet Mini Blazer, with 98,000 miles on it. And I can't even describe what it smelled like on the inside. Glad to have it. It's my sacrifice. Never forget that time of my life. But now, it's time for
Shout outs.
JC up in San Fran, of course. We always got to give out a shout out to our boy. Lydia and the gang over at the Civic Center Pharmacy in Scottsdale. And a big hand for Jose, who's listening right now in Columbia, live on the World Wide Web. We are streaming there. I don't know if you know that. We meet here in Phoenix on KFNX every Thursday at 4, but at the same time, we are streaming on the World Wide Web all over the globe, and people are listening to us. The Power Hour audience is growing as we speak. People are calling folks, and they're telling them, tune in, there's this guy on 1100 AM. You won't believe it. He's completely insane. And they're telling people, and they're sending me emails. I know they're growing. I know I'm listening to you guys. I finally actually answered 4 or 5 emails today from about a month or so ago. So anyway, send those emails to me, SEVEN7@MacNewton.com. I'll read them. Okay. Sometimes we get an answer out there to you. But anyway, you have a comment. I'm serious. If you have a comment or suggestion, send me an email. And, of course, you can always listen to our archive shows on MacNewton.com. Bevzilla, where you at? And, of course, do you remember the Donna Reed show?
Of course.
Your Donna Reed, she was such an all-American lady. I'm going to send out a shout-out to Donna. Yes, Donna. And, of course, as always, the fabulous Natasha, who has a brand-new boyfriend. Yes. Oh, boo. Boo, this is sad. Oh, my God. I tell you. Oh, where else? What else would you going to be doing sitting out there on I-17 and I-10, you know? Tune in and kick back. If you had to be somewhere at 4:25, you're already late. Just kick back and hang in with the Mac Daddy here for a while. Last week, I kind of gave some examples and obviously touched a nerve. And I knew it was going to be a controversial show. I mentioned that. However, I was not prepared for... I won't quite go to onslaught, but I will say the stream of emails that came in bearing the same theme, I was surprised how many people liked and agreed with the example that I chose. I really felt that I was going out on a limb here with this idea. We're going to review it very quickly, whether we'll finish it up before the break, but we will after the break and go into our topic for today. What we were talking about last week is, well, I guess we won't even start it. We're just going to like listen to a little B.B. King, and we'll just pick up on that after we get back. What cut is this, Zach? Is this
Sweet 16.
Oh, Sweet 16. This is a classic. Oh, check that. He plays a Gibson 330, I believe, with no F-holes in the side, so it gets that unique sound. I've never heard B.B. King play a chord ever in my entire life. Blues player, no doubt. And when you see him, it's like every note's coming right through his face. Coming right through his face. B.B. King. This is called The Best of B.B. that came out somewhere around 1987. You guys stay exactly where you are. B.B., Jesse and myself, we'll be right back. I'm Mac Newton. You listen to the Power Hour. Sweet 16.
Lock it in. KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100. Lock it in.
CNN Radio, I'm Harry Beadle. NASA's keeping an eye on the skies as the countdown continues for tonight's launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery. CNN's Dick Iuliano reports the bitter cold that's pushed into the U.S. and down into the south could scrub the liftoff.
Thick, low clouds have moved over Cape Canaveral. Low clouds could delay the launch because NASA needs a good view of the rising shuttle, and the shuttle commander needs to see the emergency landing strip.
For now, the shuttle's still scheduled to launch at 9:35 p.m. Eastern Time. President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair say there are some good ideas in the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, but neither man will endorse large-scale troop withdrawals. It's been another deadly day in Iraq. Insurgent attacks have claimed at least 23 lives. Delaware has joined the list of states dealing with E. coli infections linked to Taco Bell restaurants. One case is confirmed there. Another is suspect. This is CNN Radio.
KFNX News Time is 4:31. And from the KFNX Big Story News Desk, here is the very latest. A dozen Pearl Harbor survivors remembered the 65th anniversary of the day that will live in infamy. Ceremonies mark the day at the state capitol's Wesley Bowen Plaza. This is Pearl Harbor Day, a day on which 3,600 Americans did not make it, including 1,117 who still remain on the battleship USS Arizona. Senator John McCain says the findings of the Iraq Study Group reiterate his belief that more troops are needed in the region.
We must have more troops over there. That has to be accompanied by a larger Marine Corps and Army, maybe 20,000 more Marines and 80,000 more Army troops so we can handle whatever's necessary.
McCain says he disagrees with the report's description of the additional troops as a temporary deployment. He says no timetable should be set for withdrawal, and McCain also disagrees with the suggestion that the U.S. enter talks with Iran. Mark Goodeau is a so-called baseline killer. That's the word from Phoenix police, who say they have developed enough evidence to charge Goodeau with 71 crimes, including 9 homicides. Sergeant Andy Hill says one of the homicides was a new one that was only linked to the baseline killer in September. He says investigators eventually developed the physical and forensic evidence of the April 10th murder of Sophia Nunez to Mark Goodeau. And a federal grand jury has indicted 6 Southern Arizona men on child pornography charges. U.S. Attorney's Office announced that a 7th man will face state charges, will be prosecuted by the Pima County Attorney's Office. Time now for us to head out over to the KFNX Traffic Center for the latest on the afternoon commute.
KFNX Traffic Report brought to you by TomTom. We've got an injury accident, US 60, that's at Higley Road. Another collision, McKellips Road west of Mesa Drive in the clearing stages. Got a wreck there, Carefree Highway at the 17. Another injury accident, 67th Avenue and Indian School Road. And look out for a wreck, 19th Ave and Bethany Home. Otherwise, 430 here, all your standard gridlocks should be taking shape. TomTom Go is your portable everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice will guide you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Zach Geist from the KFNX Traffic Center. Please behave yourselves.
Now here's Jim Howell with a look at the weather.
We'll gradually see a trend toward cloudy and cooler weather this weekend. Highs back to the low to mid-60s Saturday through the first of the week, but no rain. Until then, enjoy another sunny day tomorrow with highs in the mid-70s. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Our next news in 30 minutes or when it breaks. And now more interesting talk on the Valley's News Talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. I'm Bob Baker, and you're up to date.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. On the radio and beyond. Check us out on the web at 1100kfnx.com.
Welcome back, gang. Into the great B.B. King playing his guitar, Lucille. It was around 51 or 52 when B.B. King was playing a gig in some small town in Arkansas. Thrill is gone. Two guys got into a fight over a girl. Kicked over a lamp and the place started going up in flames. Everyone had to evacuate this bar fast. B.B. King runs outside, realizes his guitar is still inside the bar. Fire department's not there yet. B.B. King jumps back into the flames, dodging falling wood and timbers, finds his guitar, almost gets burned up, gets outside safely, finds out later that the girl that the guys were fighting over was named Lucille. And he says, that's the name of my guitar. Well, lots of Lucilles have come and gone over the years, but he even markets one. Exactly, a big black Gibson, calls it Lucille. Now you know. More stuff here on the Power Hour. I think that if you're interested in becoming all that you were born to be, in other words, the very best you, and it takes a lot of courage to be the very best you. I like to use the term frequently, that the Creator never builds a stairwell or a stairway leading nowhere, that there's always a purpose to everything and every being. But climbing that stairway to your destiny, to your true purpose, can be a very frightening thing. But to become all you can be, you must live more consciously, more awake, more alert, more aware. You must take full control over your thought process so that the combined power of the mental laws that I'm going to talk about today and next week will be moving you in a direction of your own choosing rather than steering you blindly on some form of mental autopilot. Now, we talked last week, and I'm just going to briefly go over it again, how we awake from this day sleep, how we begin the process of awakening and live a totally aware, awake, alert life as opposed to the waking sleep, the warm, comfortable, gentle stream of waking sleep where your thoughts just flow past in some form of a continuous collage of non-associated feelings and images that a lot of people live their lives like. We'll start this process by reflecting on the parts of our life, past, present, future. And I talked about this exercise in awareness, that if we could imagine, I'm using your mind to imagine that before you were born, somewhere on the other side of the cosmos, the heavens, you had evolved over several lifetimes to become a particular type of person with a particular set of qualities, interests, talents, abilities. It doesn't matter what you think about the idea of reincarnation. This is not about that. This is an exercise, and it's just that. And this point's going to be abundantly clear in just a second. Continuing this line of thought, imagine that you deliberately chose your parents. And this is an interesting point, which allowed me really to see myself and all the things that have happened in my life differently, even helped adjust my attitude toward my father, to imagine that I actually chose my parents, that I actually chose the situation that I was born into and I was brought up in. Now, I did this, and you did this, because at your stage of personal growth and evolution, there were specific lessons about yourself and about life and other people in the world and the universe that you had to learn, and which you could learn in no other way. Now, imagine also that the person you are today, especially the good qualities you've developed, they came about largely, or at least in part, as the result of the difficult experiences that you had growing up, and especially as the result of the problems that you had with one or both of your parents. I've heard so many times of people saying, well, you know, you're the person you are today because of all the things you've had to go through. And my response was always consistent. You know what? I would have loved not to think that I could have gotten where I am or even further without having to go through all that. And I've even had some people, maybe more highly evolved than I was at the time, would say, you do know you chose your parents, don't you, Mac? And I would say, there is no way. And I would say, that's actually offensive to me. But as I've taken time through the years to think about that, it's not offensive at all. As part of an exercise, it's helpful for me and can be for you too, to become more aware. Now, here's an important question. If you learn that you had deliberately chosen your parents and that the person you are today has come about as a direct result of your choice, how would this discovery change your attitude toward one or both of your parents? And how would this discovery change your attitude toward the experiences of your childhood? Would you be more positive about it? Would you be more accepting of the things that have happened? Would you see yourself and your past experiences in a different light? I certainly did. It allowed me to take forgiveness then to a higher plane. and make it an integral part of my life. I had no need now to turn off. I could actually face the reality of my world. As you begin to think about this idea, about having deliberately chosen your parents, you can now start to see possibilities that maybe you've ignored up to now. Instead of seeing yourself as a victim or a passive agent caught up in the circumstances beyond your control, you start to see yourself now as an active participant in the old evolution of yourself as a person. Now, let's take this experiment just a teeny bit further. This exercise, I'm sorry. Imagine that you are here on this planet Earth to do something wonderful with your life, which is not a stretch because, again, you are put here for a reason. That you were put here to become an exceptional person and to make an important contribution to this world. Imagine also that this is all part of a great master plan that has been carefully designed with your best interests in mind. And that every event and every circumstance of your life is an indispensable part of a giant jigsaw puzzle, the outline of which you can only begin to see when you stand back and you look at your life from a higher plane. Assume, as a general rule, that whatever your current situation or difficulty may be, it is exactly what you require and need right now to experience for growth, to teach you something you need to know before you can continue on your upward progression. With this perspective, now you can see that every experience is a positive experience if you view it as an opportunity for growth. Okay, now let's turn it around just a bit and go backwards, project backwards, but stay calm, okay, for a moment. Clarity, keep a positive mental attitude, and think about how every previous experience and situation of your life might have been sent to you at exactly the right time. As I talked about my car, and I talked about the riding the bike, all those things came to me at the right time to bring certain things into place that I had to learn and experience, that I had to be taught. And then if I can stay connected to that and aware and alert, it becomes an integral part of my journey upward now. They were all sent at the right time. As you stand back and appreciate the incredibly complex, sort of interconnected, interwoven events that have brought you to where you are right now, you can now develop the perspective of a philosopher or of the superior intellectual. You can begin to superimpose on your experience this sense of coherence, an attitude and a feeling that your life is part of something greater than just yourself, that everything fits together and everything happens for a reason. And as you think of your life as a series of events and experiences that are almost conspiring, in fact, they are conspiring toward your achieving some great goal or making some great contribution to all of mankind, you develop this sense of destiny, that you feel destined to be great. You feel destined to make a difference. And that is the hallmark in every human being of potential greatness, that sense of personal destiny. Now, these mental exercises that I'm talking about here, they enable you to start unlocking the powers of your subconscious mind, to start to using your whole brain, not just the conscious brain, but the entire brain. In other words, look at your brain like you see an iceberg, where the tip of the iceberg that shows above the waterline is the conscious mind, where the real bulk of it, the hugeness, lies below the waterline in the subconscious mind. We want to unlock the powers of that huge entity and take advantage of it on a consistent basis on call. And we can. These exercises enable you to put these laws to work in a deliberate and systematic way. For example, I've mentioned before, Jesse, that the law of control says simply this. You feel good about yourself to the degree that you feel you are in control of your life. You feel bad to the degree that you feel your life is controlled by something or someone else, and there's nothing you can do about it. So you feel out of control or out of harmony, if you like. Now, you activate the law of control by choosing consciously to view yourself as an active, creative agent, influence in your life. When you take mental control, you place your hands firmly on the steering wheel of your own destiny, and you are no longer like that bumper car in a carnival going off in one direction or another based upon what's happening to or around you. You become the architect of your own future and present. The second law, the law of accident, is not really a law at all, Jesse. It's more of a metaphysical principle. It's only a law to the degree that you choose to live by it, more like a traffic law. It's not an absolute law. It's like that law of gravity, the law of reaction force, the law of centrifugal force. Not at all. These are universal laws that work on you 24/7, whether you believe in them or not. The law of control is a universal law, and whether you believe in it or not, it is affecting you, and you cannot deny its power as any more than you can deny the law of gravity. You climb on a building in Lima, Peru, or London, England, or Paris, France, or downtown Phoenix, Arizona, jump off, and you are going to fall at 32 feet per second squared right to the pavement. Whether you understand it, whether you know anything about it, whether someone's explained it to you, whether you agree with it, whether it's convenient for you or not, it works on you. The law of control is one of those. The law of accident, however, is a law that you can either choose to live by or not. That's why it's more of a principle, a metaphysical principle. But because it's lived by so often, it has been described as a law. And this law of accident says simply that there is no way you can control your life. It's more a process of who you know than what you know. It's being in the right place at the right time. It's how the ball bounces. It's how the cookie crumbles. That's what it says. And you can free yourself from this law of accident, which, by the way, you can always tell people who live by the law of accident because they make no plans. They set no goals. They just simply go along and hope everything just works out. They want to stay the same but get better. And you free yourself from this when you become aware of the role of the own thoughts, of your own thoughts in directing the course of your life, because all control, our first law, starts with taking control of the thoughts you hold in your conscious mind. That is where all control begins. So all control is mental. Sometimes I interchange law number three and law number one. Law number three is the law of cause and effect, which says for every effect in our lives, there is a specific cause, that there are no accidents. It is directly opposite of the principle, the law of accident. There are no accidents. Everything happens for a reason. Biblically, it's explained by the law of sowing and reaping. It says for everything that you reap what you sow. Before you can reap, you must sow. Every effect has a specific cause. And for our purposes here on this show, all causes are mental. All causation is mental. Thoughts are causes and conditions are effects. So if you want to change the conditions or effects of your life in the future, you must change the causes or the thoughts in the present. And you activate this law when you stand back from your day-to-day life and you reflect upon the incredible number of so-called coincidences that have shaped you into the person you are today. Now you can see that nothing has happened by accident at all. You realize that everything happened and is happening as the result of an irrefutable law. It happens by law. Now, the fourth law is the law of belief. And the law of belief simply says that whatever you feel or whatever you believe with feeling becomes your reality. And you trigger the law of belief. When you accept that your life and your experiences are leading you toward the accomplishment of something important. Some people believe that, good things happen in threes. Well, it's very, very true. Good things happen in threes, sixes, nines, twelves, fifteens, any number you like. But it's so often because people believe that they're not entitled for good things to happen in a continuous flow, or they believe that they're not deserving of good things to happen to them. So as a result of their belief, they will then activate the universal law, and they will bring negative happenings into their life. They will attract these things by law. And no matter what they've done, how hard they've worked, right before they're able to reach the brass ring, they will make that fatal mistake that will predispose them to failure. The law of belief says the more you think about this as inevitable, the more it is to come true for you. Your beliefs do become your realities. William James of Harvard University wrote very eloquently years ago on this subject at great length, and encapsulated, he wrote, "Your beliefs determine your life." The next law is called the law of expectations. And you apply it to your life when you confidently expect to gain something worthwhile, if not invaluable, from everything that happens to you. You know, this attitude of confident self-expectancy makes your life into more of an adventure. So, you know, a lot of people are expecting negative things happening. Some people are almost paranoid about life. They think that disaster waits around every corner, that it's everything that happens is going to, every person they meet is going to take advantage of them, and they're paranoid. Well, W. Clement Stone, he created this term, the inverse paranoid, where he is basically saying that he believes that everything and everything that happens and everyone he meets is part of a grand conspiracy on the part of the universe to make him a great success. And he expects it. So when something happens that he doesn't understand, he doesn't view it as potentially a disaster. Now he's looking at it for that inevitable positive success that is contained somewhere there, and he knows it is, and you know what? It's there. Expectations, the law of expectations. And again, this is a law, and you apply it when you confidently expect to gain something worthwhile, if not invaluable, from everything that happens to you. No matter where it comes from, this attitude of confident self-expectancy makes your life into more of an adventure, with unpredictable but happy events occurring to move you toward a positive outcome. You become more optimistic, you become more cheerful, and you know what? You become more calm and more relaxed as you move inevitably toward your great successes. In other words, your expectations do truly become your own self-fulfilling prophecies. One of the most powerful laws that I've ever read about and ever experienced and had explained to me very, very clearly by Brian Tracy is the law of attraction, which says, in effect, that you attract into your life the people and circumstances that are in harmony with your dominant thoughts of hope, of optimism, of things that are possible. And it is your future-oriented thinking that triggers the law of attraction. It is the things that you think about on a more consistent basis that triggers the law of attraction. And what you dwell upon continually becomes dominant thoughts, becomes a belief. It becomes so big that it becomes a bundle of beliefs. It becomes almost a destiny. It becomes your self-concept. And you always have to live your life consistent with the self-concept, or you'll go crazy. So in other words, Once you get control of your subconscious mind and you create beliefs consistent with the person you want to be, with the things you want to have and do, it becomes almost impossible for you not to succeed when living your life in harmony with the universal laws. And the more you think of yourself and your life as uniquely blessed and uniquely important, the more you attract to yourself the ideas, all sorts of opportunities that would have never come in any other way, and even the people that will make all your dreams come true, and they'll show up at exactly the right time. People say things like, well, when the student is ready, the teacher shows. Well, of course that's true, because when the student feels ready, they're dwelling upon these thoughts and they attract that teacher or that circumstance into their lives. It is inevitable. When you see yourself as a special person put on this earth with a special purpose, and your outer world of health and work and material accomplishments are beginning to reflect your inner attitudes of mind, that is now consistent with the law we call the law of correspondence. When all of these things begin to correspond, as you plant those what I call thought seeds into your subconscious by continually holding them in your conscious mind. You hold the thoughts in your conscious mind, just the tip of the iceberg. And then they are accepted as true by your subconscious mind. And they're held there and put together with others until they form huge dominant thoughts, and they're fed back to you, and it affects everything you say and do. All of your mannerisms, all of your gestures, all of your words, all your deeds, all your actions are consistent with the thoughts that you've held as true in your conscious mind that have become dominant thoughts in your subconscious world. This then becomes the law of subconscious activity. What I'm trying to do, game, is show you that success can be controlled strictly by universal law. And as we start to apply these laws to our goal setting later on, you'll find that you're... What is going on here? This show can't be... What is going on? This is ridiculous.
It flew by. All right.
Oh, my gosh. Zach, are you telling me we got 1 minute left in the show?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. I should not have wasted all that time at the beginning being crazy. Well, anyway, maybe gave you a laugh. We're going to pick up right there at the law of subconscious activity. Jesse, make a note on that.
Got it.
Okay, perfect. We've been fortunate to have the great B.B. King, Riley B. King, as our musical guest host today. I want to make sure I thank Bob Adlock. Also, he got the whole thing started. I want to thank also Pat McMahon, who encouraged me to go along. Nikki, she's the best in the whole world. Okay? And Jesse, thanks for helping out, baby.
Thank you.
Zach, you're making it happen, baby. Caledonia, what makes your big head so hard? My name is Mac Newton. We will be back here on KFNX again next week at 4 o'clock. AKA, be true to yourself. What we got? Remember, we always say it. 3, 2, 1. Peace. Mac Daddy is out.
This is Arizona's News Talk leader, KFNX 1100, Cave Creek, Phoenix. It's 5 o'clock.
CNN Radio, I'm Stan Case. 7 shuttle astronauts are at the launch pad hoping to lift off tonight on a space adventure, but nature will have something to say about that. Our Dick Giuliano is live at Kennedy Space Center. Dick?
Stan, they're clad in their orange-collared high-altitude suits. The astronauts are dressed and hoping they have somewhere to go tonight. Discovery Commander Mark Polansky just checked communications with the firing room.
NTD, CDR, comm check. CDR, this is NTD. I have you loud and clear. Welcome aboard, Roman. Loud and clear also. Good evening, Jeff.
Air Force weather officers still looking warily at the skies. What they see is a thick cloud cover in violation of...